It's Busted Pencils. And you know what it is. It's fully leaded education talk. You know, it's the educated educators who like to talk education. Class is in session. A lot to talk about, but Johnny and Jacob, thanks for, you know, hanging out, taking care of homeroom while I was tardy, or maybe I was actually absent. I did get a note from my mom, and if you guys need to see it, I can give it to you guys to let you know that actually I had my mom write a note to cover for me just being, no. Do you ever get those notes when you were a teacher, Johnny, from the parents where you went, all right, parent, you're just covering?
Yeah, I'm sure I did. I don't really care. I mean, if you had to be taking care of something that day and it was no biggie. But yeah, I know what you mean. They got those absences. Tim, you got an excuse absence. But I'll tell you what, it's good to be here with both you guys. And Tim, we teased a little bit. I mean, you know, you probably listened. Jacob and I dug into more discussing of the evolving changes in higher ed. And I laid out sort of a framework. I was like, these are the things I see really, really in flux right now. Mm-hmm. And one of those being, you know, something that I know you're big into, you know, into is the impact of AI. But also a tease that, hey, the pretty soon here on Busted Pencils, Tim would be sharing, you know, a little bit more about his transition and his change right now in the ever-evolving landscape of higher ed.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be today, Tim, but whenever pencil busters out there are eager to know, hey, what's happening with Tim? Where's he at? What's he doing these days?
Well, you know, John, I mean, one day, yeah, we'll make it clear what's actually happening in my, you know, future. Lots of moving parts, but it's all good. And, you know, talk about higher education and just a little hint there. Yeah, that's going to have a lot to share, lots to talk about, because lots of incredibly intricate moving parts happening in higher education. And I know you guys are talking about all of that. And yes, Johnny, you know what? I mean, we got a huge topic. We've been covering this. And I'm going to admit that potentially maybe last Wednesday, I may have been getting really psyched up and I may have confused different articles a little bit. So just to make sure, you know, we did talk about Stephen's article, Stephen Mintz, great piece about AI. People are going like, Tim, I'm not sure that was really, well, in my mind, I had read Stephen's article and this article in the Chronicle of Higher Education by Scott Latham. Are you ready for the AI university? Everything is about to change. And I got to admit, I got one of those kind of brain milkshakes that happened where you put everything in there and you spend a few nights and this stuff gets kind of shaken up and it becomes, you know, one type of thing. So I got those, you know, a little bit mixed up, but I still think the topic here is something, Johnny, that we really continue to need to explain, to talk about, to dissect, to disagree. But, you know, here in this piece, and I'll put it out there right away, are you ready for AI university? Everything is about to change. The most extreme end of this is to say, Johnny, guess what? If you in higher education are, you know, a not a great faculty member in the higher ed, I'm not a faculty hater. I love faculty that are doing incredibly awesome work. But even if you are an institution here, at least in Scott Latham, not that Scott's saying this, he's wondering and thinking about the projection. Could universities themselves be replaced by artificial intelligence in the new world where students are looking for credentials, not necessarily physical experiences? And if that's the case, wouldn't AI, even as we've pointed out, couldn't a better than average AI experience in a course be much more worth it than a really crappy physical in-person experience on a college campus that's not that great. And if you expand that out, Johnny, why not just have a full AI university for those students that just want to get a degree and want to move on with their work life and take on? That's the question. And I think maybe I was pushing, you know, came across as a professor hater. And I'm really looking at this and asking the question of going, is it possible that some form of AI university is a preference in the future, Johnny?
Tim, I'll say it this way. I mean, I can go eat dinner at McDonald's, or I can go eat dinner at like a local diner or establishment that, you know, differs from the very same things. And yeah, I think AI can provide some variety, but I think it will not match the quality that most great programs will evolve to. But I do think that AI is going to be part of that evolving landscape of higher ed. And on Monday, Tim, I talked about four kind of big areas of high change and long overdue attention for higher ed. And I know institutions out there have been attentive to these, but I see them as areas where I think AI is going to play a massive role in expediting. I think that's kind of the part of two where your article is coming from that you're referencing here is that, you know, I talked about that we know that there is a massive digital transformation and a hybrid learning model. Like students are, you know, expecting and used to pretty quick, you know, turnaround time, like pretty high response. This is like Google, Netflix, Amazon generation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's in the article you're referencing too, right? That this whole idea of like students have, you know, different expectations. That was my other main point on Homeroom this week was that student demographic and expectations have radically shifted over the last few years, as well as, you know, the current economy we're in, financial pressures and new business models. I think in the article that your milkshake was made in, talked about that like AI classrooms can't fill. So that fits nicely with capitalism's, you know, yeah, of infinite market growth, because there really isn't a class limit size. I think there's also some myths about that, because there are some limits to like how large of a group can interact and community be developed in. But by and large, you know, an AI learning module, which is already exists and will only get better,
mm-hmm,
right, isn't going to necessarily be a less, like, it won't necessarily be low quality if it has 170 participants versus like if I have 18 in my classroom. Mm-hmm. I know in traditional methods of teaching, I'm going to do pretty dang good with 18 students. Start to get to like 35, 40. Okay. My method of delivery changes,
right?
Start to get to 70, 80. It radically changes for me to be effective. And I may even lose quality in that increase. So I think there is some real important understandings to new business models. And then we also talked about, Tim, you talked about skills. I think it's a major part, mm-hmm, of that changing demographic and expectation in the role of higher ed is that skills-based education and workforce alignment are key. That, you know, this group of students has a high return on their investment.
Yeah.
You know, they really want it. Yeah. They want, like, I want to go become this.
Right.
And fill in the blank this. I want to go become, you know, a sound engineer. Okay, how am I going to be learning things that make me not only a competitive, but a leader in sound engineering? And so I think those are all really important areas. I loved this article that you shared that was part of your milkshake, man. We'll get you, listeners, a link to it, because it's in the Chronicle of Higher Education, which means it could possibly be behind a paywall. I think they allow you to see a certain number of articles, but we're giving you the gist that there are some sort of, you know, predictions that within the next 10 years, if you're not including AI as part of your pedagogy, as part of how you teach, how you organize in higher ed, how you advise, then you're probably going the way of the dinosaur. And that's like any changed industry. I'll still argue, Tim, that I don't think And I don't think you were saying this, but I don't think like professors necessarily will be out of a job. Good ones. I do think though, our job will change.
Okay.
And not in a bad way. It's like any technology, right? If we're aligning the content of what we're learning in our course is directly related to the things you're going to be doing in your career or in your life as a democratic citizen in this country, in this global economy, in this world, then you're going to be engaging with AI. That's a fact. Rapidly. And so that puts us all in a moment of humility. You know, I'm big on that, Tim. Not being humiliated. That's not fun for anybody. But in humility and saying, hey, I know a lot of things, but there's also stuff I don't know.
Yeah,
and that room for improvement is always a great room to be in. And it's always a crowded one because there's always room for improvement. And so, you know, learning with AI and how it impacts our teaching, how it changes what we do in higher education is, I think, an exciting thing for a lot of us professors committed to the craft.
I like your qualifier there for those of us committed to the craft, because I think that's essential in doing this. I want to quote again for the first time, Scott Latham's piece in the Chronicle of Higher Education, and quote, "I can think of no plausible scenario in which there will be an equal number of faculty members in 10 years as there are today. Will there still be human-led instruction in some places? Of course. We still have record shops and drive-in movie theaters, but they are vestiges of how things were, not a reflection of the actual market preferences." And I think what he's saying there, Johnny, is what you're talking about there too. There's this market kind of expectation of what a lot of students, not all, let's be honest, a lot of students are kind of saying, here's what I want. I know what it is. I want to move on to this job. How quickly can I get there? And actually, I think students are being more and more aware of their need to also have artificial intelligence preparation in their, you know, education. And so an institution that's inserting, putting AI forward as part of, you know, not just professors using it, but actually having students work with it is also something they're looking for. So is there AI implementation? But, you know, it's the other part, though, too, is to say, okay, who's driving this? And I know there was, a great piece producer Jacob sent us in Wisconsin, you know, coming out that, in Milwaukee, and you know, we've talked to the Department of Public Instruction, Dr. Joe Underley about this, in Wisconsin, President Trump put out last week, hey, look, we need is, and I will say this has got to be one of the only things, if not the only thing, where I don't disagree with the Trump administration in putting forward that we have to have AI education implemented in our K-12 schools. And in Wisconsin, the piece that Jacob gave us, there's this reference to a kind of a little bit of a tug of war. Yeah, we want experience. No, we don't want students using it for cheating. I'm not sure there. I got to say, I'm really, Johnny, I'm going to go out on a limb here and push on this. I think those arguments are so outdated already about whether or not kids are using it for cheating, whether we should implement it a little bit or here and there. If you're having those discussions, I'm not saying that is the main discussion in Wisconsin, because we know we have Brittany Walsh up there at the CSUN, rural Wisconsin, doing incredible AI stuff. Check out last Saturday's show so you can really hear from Brittany. But those conversations don't understand where AI is already in our classrooms, or maybe more importantly, where AI is in the workforce already and where it is in people's lives that are messing with it. And just talking about it again as a glorified cheating machine, or, you know, kind of hedging and saying, well, I think they should have AI literacy. I think those arguments are done, gone, way out of date. And we should be thinking seriously about implementing it, how we're implementing it, why we're implementing it, and really going in a full kind of experiential type of, this is an AI moment. It's a cultural change. We've talked about this over the past year. How are we going to adapt to this change in the culture? And maybe it's time for the rows, the warehouses, the age, the grade, the systematic destruction of the natural way kids learn and access things. Maybe it's time now to finally break down the tradition of what we've always known and go where we should be going. Johnny, that's a lot there, man.
Yeah, that's a lot of word soup, Tim. I'm gonna back up a bit to things too, because I think anytime you have these moments, and we're in one, and I like that you're in a high change moment, there are a lot of interests involved. So you always got to ask why and who benefits and who suffers. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt about it. Like the current federal administration's interest in imposing AI, right, and mandating it, we'll say, is one of economic interest. There's a lot of products to be sold and a lot of companies that those members of that administration have some affiliation with their investment in. And so it is about making money, just like high stakes testing and all those are, you know, an economic driving force for imposing. So I know right out of the gate that's why it's being imposed. And it's a way to sort of throw schools and educators into a frenzy as well. But I agree with you by and large that, like, again, like the superintendent of instruction in Wisconsin said, hey, we're not banning AI. In fact, it's like part of the everyday lives of so many, not only industries, but of our classrooms and the students learning. And so we have to embrace and know how to use it. Every technology, right, can be a tool. It can also be a weapon. It can be a useful tool. It can also be destructive. Mm-hmm. And I know it's different than the calculator, but it just, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And as a math teacher, these are the same conversations we were having about calculators. And I like, there's also some humility to the Church of AI, Tim. I know, like, I don't mean to come hard at your congregation, but the idea is that at the end of the day, our reliance and trust and dependability on technology is a weak move. I think it's important as an enhancement, as a tool, but it is not a replacement. And I think it's a both and. You got to know its strengths and limitations, but you also have to know how to interact with one another and how to physically connect and do some teaching and learning. It's going to transform the job of teaching some, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe even a lot, ideally for the better. Mm-hmm. But the only way we're going to know that is if we engage with, hey, what are its strengths and what are its weaknesses? And how do we still do a really important human task of teaching? And I love that, you know, certain advising, every single one of us have experienced the improvement in, like, customer service, like those right. chatbots and different things that sort of are also limiting, but it sure can cut down to, we've all been in one of those rabbit holes where, like, you know, express your concern, what do you need today, in the chat box. And, you know, you're kind of chatting with an AI bot and at a certain point, the AI bot can't answer your question and you're connected with the representative. And I think in the context of higher ed, we're going to see a lot of that. And I agree with you, Tim, a couple of weeks ago, you said sooner than 10 years. I agree with that. I think almost immediately,
yeah,
we're going to see things like advising, you know, start there and help advisors. It's not going to eliminate the need for advisors, but help advisors who already have way too many students to advise.
Right.
Narrow down to those kinds of troubleshooting tasks that their human expertise can help them solve. Right.
Yeah.
Do you need to be connected with the representative? That model is going to trickle into higher ed pretty quickly. And I'm excited about that. As someone who advises a large number of students, I'm like, some days 70% of my day could have been handled with a quick FAQ visit to the website.
Exactly.
I am overpaid to answer questions that the information is already out there doing, but a lot of busy work will be streamlined into AI world and allow for us to do some pretty important connecting with students. Now, I even think AI can do some pretty good mentoring, can give pretty good feedback. I mean, it is getting advanced. Yeah. So the capacity of that tool to meet the needs of more students is something I'm pretty excited about. I don't think it will ultimately replace that. Hey, you need to also be able to sit down sometimes with somebody and go over like, hey, what are you learning? Where are you going with things? What do you hope to be doing? And that human connection is really important. It isn't essential at every question, but it's an important piece of the whole picture. So I'm excited about that. And then I started with like, hey, our reliance on it is one I throw caution towards. Because Tim, at the end of the day, man, we're going to run out of resources. Don't even think about it. Like the idea of infinite growth only goes so far. And you know, there are going to be blackouts, power outages, shutdowns, hiccups, glitches, and things that, you know, we're going to still have to have capacity for our human to human stuff. It's like, hey, we can talk about like, hey, there's fast food and there's like pre-made meals and there's all kinds of things. But at the end of the day, you know, food comes from the earth, has to be farmed somehow. And even AI farming still requires people to do that kind of work with it. And, you know, in facing imminent collapses around, you know, we don't want to forget how to cook and grow and, you know, and eat food and share. We're not gonna. It's simply just not going to happen. So I think the same thing for schools, same thing for teaching. We're going to need to convene socially together. We're going to need humans doing that. But I agree with you, Tim. It's going to look different. It's going to be hopefully better product because we're all going to really lean into what are the tools available to best do that job. And let's put those tools to work in our schools, in our classrooms, and in our communities. So I love when superintendents like Jill Underly say things like, hey, we're not going to ban AI, but we're going to cautiously make sure we know how to use it. We're going to teach kids about it. We're going to learn as a group of professionals, as teachers, as school leaders, what capacity do we have it at work in our classrooms and in our schools? How, and we're going to ask the important question, why, and who's benefiting and who's suffering? And how do we balance those things? How do we make sure there's not unjust suffering, you know, an equitable benefit here?
I figured this out now. What we're going to do then is we're going to teach students how to ask AI to make a fire by rubbing two sticks together and then have them go out and rub two sticks together. Because you know what? You know what? It might be one thing to know how to ask ChatGPT how to make a fire, but you got to know how to actually build a fire. I hear what you're saying, Johnny Lupin.
And there are some things that it's just faster at. And that's helpful. And there are other things that it's way slower at. For example, Tim, if like you and I are going to go out and play catch and you've never played catch before, right? I could say, Tim, I want you to ask AI how to throw a baseball, how to catch a baseball, how to do this. What do you need? You could do all that work. I mean, that's minutes of extra preparation. Or Tim, I could just put a glove in your hands and take a ball. We could go outside and we could start throwing the ball around.
So you're telling me
there's value to both. If I just turn you loose to AI, I'm not sure you can go play catch with AI.
Well, again, it reminds me of that commercial out there where, you know, you're becoming your parent and they're having those guys standing around trying to build that fire. Johnny, you're telling me you're going to give me two sticks and say, go out there and build a fire, Tim. You'll figure it out. You know what, though? Now it's time for your moment of Zen. Objectivity is not desirable because if we want to have an effect on the world, we need to emphasize those things which will make students more active citizens and more moral people.
Hey, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils Class in Session. You can always grab great podcasts like this one. Just search Busted Pencils on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And of course, you can always find us on Civic Media website, or you can get at us at the BustedPencils.com website. Hey, don't forget, you can find us throughout the week, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, with homerooms, Class in Session, and always loads of fun to wrap up the work week on Fridays with hurdles and home runs. And folks, listen up, Pencil Busters. You can always grab busted pencils at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network station for an hour of your favorite Blue Collar Scholars. That's right, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.